Hello and welcome to River Writers, a production of the Writers Guild of Astoria, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting writers in the literary arts of the North Coast and the Lower Columbian region. Aired the second Monday of each month at 9 a.m., River Writers provides a chance to peek behind the curtain at the craft of writing. What motivates writers to do the work they do? And what have they learned through their creative process? Hello, I'm your host, Sean Davis. This month, I'm lucky enough to sit down and speak with the 3-time Oregon Book Award winner, Lydia Yuknovich. Lydia is a teacher, a writer, and editor based in Oregon. She's the author of the memoir, The Chronology of Water, which is soon going to be turned into a movie directed by Kristen Stewart. And she wrote the novels Dora, A Head Case, The Small Backs of Children, and The Book of Joan. She's also known for her TED Talk, The Beauty of Being a Misfit, which has been viewed over 3.2 million times. And she wrote a follow-up book called The Misfits Manifesto. So first off, thank you so much for being here. So there's so much to talk about with your books, and I want to talk a lot about, I would love to talk about your individual books and then the movie that might be coming soon or will be coming soon, corporeal writing that you put together. But since it's a radio show, we only have like 20 minutes. So, and I was just telling you, there's so many just creative and amazing, talented writers here on the North Coast. And so many writers in my experience are so empathetic. They feel, you know, we're just like raw nerves in this world. And when the world seems like it's on fire, I mean, not literally as Oregon is today, but like with the huge political extremes, our fight to hold on to civil rights, voting rights, the right for a woman to choose what happens to her own body, climate crisis. So I guess my question is, what inspired you to write about these issues? And is there a specific moment that kind of led you into writing about these bigger issues? We'll start there.
Yeah, I'm so with you on both the condition of being a writer or an artist and the condition of the world, and that's a really intense relationship, sometimes beautifully intense and sometimes brutally intense. What led me in the beginning to be writing about social issues or things I really care about probably comes from the fact that I'm an introvert, and so I inhabit the observer position a lot, or even the person who hides, like at parties, or the person who is in the hallway or the corner. And from the observer position, it's a really great narrative position to be in because you see things other people don't see.
Right.
Like, other people are often looking at the main event or the main drama in the room, and I'm looking down the hall at the person who's cleaning the room or making the food, or, you know, I just see the world differently. And when it came to being a storyteller, I wanted to tell stories about the people whose backs all this is on while the fancier, prettier people get the stage for their main dramas. And I'm pretty sure that's where it comes from. And then the other thing, like so many children in this world, my home life was a combat zone from the get-go, which you know about too. Mm-hmm. And so some of us get that metaphor so early that when we see conflict out in the world, we're kind of the people who know how to tell the story. So that's the upside of being raised in a crappy situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I never really thought about it that way. But the war was full of trauma, but also my childhood was full of trauma. I mean, you think it's, and I was always an introvert as well. But at the same time, when you're in an abusive relationship with your parents, or like for me, with my, I became kind of a chameleon.
Yeah, I would say that's an introvert skill set because I've, you know, now I'm old. So I've met a whole bunch of us, and especially introverts who come from trauma, which isn't everyone, but a lot of people. We're all shapeshifters. That's a big trait that is both a survival skill, but sometimes it's actually useful.
My next question is like, as like our us, people who are these exposed nerves and taking everything in from the outside world. As you're writing, how do you keep from just breaking down?
Yeah, I was headed there next. It's a hard question. I have a deep understanding that, for example, war is part of every human epoch since humans showed up.
Yeah.
And so there's no time where there hasn't been the horror of war or soldiers who fight in war or civilians who have to deal with or are killed by war. There's no part of human history where that was not the case. So it kind of helps to have a wide angle lens that, you know, until the day there are no wars, there's always war.
Yeah.
But to your point about being a person with a lot of empathy or the raw nerve experience of being in the world, it seems like one thing that helps me personally is to remember that we have to take turns. Like, I write about what we've done to children in the world a lot. Yeah. Yeah. But I can't write about that all the time. I can't be that all the time. I can't carry that all the time or I'd be dead.
Yeah.
So sometimes I have to, you know, write about other things, or I have to paint, or I have to draw like you do. I have to, you know, take little breaks and remember to take turns with like-minded people and talk to each other. You know, I need a break. Can you carry this for a minute? You know, which I know you do too. It's part of community building. Another thing that's really obvious, but is to make art as the response. Instead of, you know, ridiculous debates on social media, like on Facebook, and getting sucked into that, just always remembering that making art is a response. And it's the thing I'm good at. It's what I have to give, and it's not nothing, because since I can't carry everything or do everything, and I'm for example, I'm not a combat soldier, I can make art with other artists so that we can keep the story going while other people are doing other things. So like figuring out what I can give and then mixing it up inside there and taking a rest now and then. But, you know, what do I have to give? Mm-hmm. And how do I give it with others and take turns? And then the last one I'd say, I think you agree with as well, which is, you know, trying to get to the non-human world, like the natural world, as often as possible, because it's bigger than us, it's older than us, and it knows more than we do.
Yeah, I completely agree. I love getting out there, and especially here in Oregon. I mean, we have the coast, the high desert, the mountains, we have different regions, you know, all in the same state. It's just really amazing.
And it helps you remember, I know you know this, it helps you remember humans are puny.
Yeah.
And we're young.
Yeah. You know, and that's one of my mechanisms to kind of survive through this is when I have really bad, I'll go outside and just stare at the stars and try to recognize the fact that we are very insignificant, but I'd rather leave a legacy of art as opposed to, you know, very witty comebacks on Facebook or something. Because
yes, I'm with you.
I tried so hard to like have arguments like that, you know, and like with evidence, and it just doesn't work, you know.
No, it's a vacuum, it's a cesspool.
You know, when I used to teach writing or critical thinking classes, one class I'd always start with saying, how many times have we exploded nuclear bombs? And mostly they'll say twice, you know. I'm like, well, did we test it before? I'm like, okay, probably three times. I'm like, okay, who else has nuclear technology and has exploded nuclear? And it goes, you know, they keep guessing until they get to like 500, 600. But the reality is like 2,600 nuclear bombs have exploded on this planet. And some of them are so big, it just, you can't even comprehend, like the Tsar Bomba. And I just having aliens watch, like, what are they doing? They're blowing themselves up, giving themselves, you know, cancer and everything else. And it's like, oh man, it's just, and I think that's really where, dealing with trauma makes it easier for me to be that outsider. And I truly believe that's what happened with Slaughterhouse-5 and Vonnegut, you know?
Yeah. You're going to like Shikasta because it's sort of like an ethnographer journalist shows up and is trying to record the data of who these human weirdos are and why in the, like you're saying, why in the world they would do these things. Great. I want to be Doris Lessing when I grow up. She's amazing. And I want to wear my hair in braids on my head. Like, she's awesome. Yeah. She was so brilliant about weaving, you know, this idea that I am a person and I have my own personal thoughts and feelings. And we live in a tapestry of everyone else and everything else that is social and political and spiritual. And her storytelling is just like no one else's because of that. I'm constantly looking for ways to like touch the trauma I know about when it comes to refugees and orphans and violence against children, but write about, you know, the transformational questions and spaces and places where the story of killing children might change. And so that'll take me to writing about whales or trees you know, mermaids, or, you know, so that I'm not always just focusing on the wounded or dead child, which, again, I can't do that all the time. I'm human, but I can write about if that was a portal or something to look at that had transformational magic, like what else is in there that I can't write about that might help people not despair or feel nothing but hopelessness. So that's why a lot of my storytelling ends up having this weird, you know, metaphysical element where suddenly the leaves are talking, or, you know, the night sky is a place you can go to.
Yeah, you have to do that, I believe, because like we were talking, you know, the whole was, I think it was a Robert Frost quote, no tear for the writer, no tear for the reader. And that stuff needs to be witnessed by people. You need to force people to see it sometimes, but we can't do that all the time because then you just go, you break, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess that kind of answers already before I asked it. The next question is like, when you are writing, what do you hope to accomplish? Are you trying to change the world, or are you just trying to do something little for yourself to make like a cathartic experience, or is it a mix of both?
I think my biggest hope is always the same. And I don't know if it's a big hope or a puny hope, but I only ever want to join forces with the storytellers who came before me and the storytellers who are going to come after me, because the me part isn't what's important. The storytelling effort is what's important. And so it's more like I feel like I'm joining something larger than myself, and I want to do that labor. I want to be that like heart warrior and join those other people. Yeah. And so that's how I end up thinking about it. I don't know if it'll change anything that I wrote something, but it will change something that thousands of us wrote something. And I can get behind.
I would say your writing has changed people. I'm sure they've come up to you. I remember going to one of your readings, and I was running the homeless shelter, and this woman who just had a baby, she was living in the homeless shelter. She's like, I just read this, and you're going to go see Lydia, and I really want to go because it's helping me through my life reading it. And you were so nice and gave her a big hug, and it was really a great moment for her. I'm sure you've seen those moments where people have told you about them. So your writing has.
Yeah, and I hear that. And I think in my mind, that's a version of taking turns. So like that night, it was my turn to be as present as possible for that woman and whoever showed up. And then another night, it would be your turn. Or, you know, you running a homeless shelter, that was your turn doing that piece. So when I do encounter actual humans who are like, I read your book, first of all, I'm like, thank you.
Yeah, like that's rare nowadays.
Yeah, and then if it had meaning, I think, oh, this was my turn to like connect with a human. So stay present. Don't be a wuss.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's how I end up thinking about it.
Oh, that's great. You know, when we're talking about, you know, joining something bigger than ourselves and getting that support, I wanted to talk about your writing group and like let other people know how important a writing group is. I'm hoping that you'll I believe that you think writing groups are very important, right?
I do. I was in a kind of group with some famous writer folk for, I guess it was more than 10 years. I can't remember how many years, but some years. And for example, they were there for every page of Chronology of Water. I think I turned in every single page. And I can say at that time, what helped was having humans in a room telling me I wasn't crazy. I wasn't alone. And that somebody might want to read this, maybe.
Sounds good support. I mean, was it, did the them listening help guide you? Or is it just the fact that you can read it out loud and that helps you? Or is it a combination of both?
At the time, when I first started with those particular people, I thought it was them, but I've come to understand it probably had nothing to do with them. It probably has to do with something much more important, which is just finding other people who feel the longing you feel to make art, who want to be making stories, and opening yourself up to the idea that you don't have to do it alone. You can do it with some other humans. That's more important than like whoever the name of the person is. I think it's partly why I started corporeal writing, to open up the process of writing in collaboration to as wide an audience as possible. Because you don't have to have a degree, you don't have to be famous, you don't have to be published, you don't have to have money. We're just into the process of doing it together. And that's probably the biggest thing I learned.
How important it, I guess I was going to say support, but in my head, because of my military background, I'm thinking camaraderie, but that's pretty similar. And you like, so you're not in this all alone. You guys are in it together. It
that's goes right. Like
Sebastian Young's tribes, you know, we need tribes. Our brains are geared to be in groups of like 30 or less, right? The church and school classrooms and stuff like that.
Yep. Yep. And also, it helps you be less self-centered and self-absorbed, and even it lessens depression because you're having to help the person next to you again and again. And that's just a profoundly better way to be human than being alone in the room and self-absorbed and depressing. Cause I'm a depression sufferer.
Yeah.
And I have, you know,
be intelligent in this world and not suffer from depression.
Agree. Yeah. Agree. But an antidote is to help the people next to you, share the stories, keep it moving.
So you mentioned corporeal writing, and for some people who live here in the North Coast, at least, I've definitely told people to go check it out, and they're like, thank you so much. This is great. Can you talk about it a little bit? Just like what it is and why you formed it?
Yeah, it's an alternative writing and art making space that is not academic or for, you know, special fancy people with decoder rings to get in the door. It's a kind of all access way to say, if you're interested in writing with other people collaboratively over time, we've got like hundreds of different approaches to writing from many, many different kinds of people. And if you feel like this would help you get through some time and make your own art, then we probably have an offering that you might find interesting. But it really started with that idea, Sean. And both of us know this from teaching at a community college. Access is everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and no, I used to sneak into your classes and not even go to college. And I found out later you did the same thing.
Yes. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. God, I so identify with that story. I mean, I've written about how so much of my life was a series of A, not knowing how to do anything, B, faking it and trying to get in until somebody noticed, or breaking the rule because I didn't know how to do it in the first place, or yeah, breaking the rule because I didn't follow rules well. And those were my learning experiences. And so I don't know if we succeed, but I do know it's a profoundly important desire we have to get the doors and windows open. And you tell us how we can help you instead of us telling you that there's only one way to do it.
And so a lot of the people here, because I've been teaching like a writing class at the college, and I teach a community writing class, and so many people come in from all walks of life. And so I know that there's a bunch of people out there that would listen to this show who feel the pull towards writing, but they don't have a degree in English or you know, MFA or anything. And even in their later years, they feel like, oh, I should write something, especially that the world's kind of crazy. What advice would you give to them?
Well, first, let's all remind each other of something everybody knows somewhere in their body, that storytelling lives in all of us. It's not a rarefied thing you need a degree or a certain class for. It's storytelling is one of the first things that happens to us. Secondly, everything that's ever happened to us in our lives is a story you're carrying in your actual body. That's where the name corporeal writing comes from. It's another word for body stories. And so if that's true, and if the human default is to have experiences and carry stories with your body, that means anybody, anywhere, at any time can tap into storytelling. And to be honest with you, we could use you. If storytelling really is an energy that can help effect change, we need more of us doing it. Because if we don't tell our own stories, then some chumps are going to tell their stories and take up all the air. And when that happens, it's dangerous.
Well, I've been wanting to ask you this question forever, because I know you don't care about awards. I think it's so cool because you knew Ken Kesey and you wrote what, Caverns with him, and then you end up winning the fiction award, the Ken Kesey fiction award. How did that feel? That's pretty amazing.
I don't mind answering that. I did care about that award. They changed the name of it shortly before I won that award. And so those words appeared very large on the screen next to my name. And I know exactly what it felt like. First of all, I cried a lot. But what it felt like was, this must be what it feels like to have a good dad.
Oh, that's so great. Oh, man, that hits me hard, too. Yeah. Wow. That's so great. Yeah. I know that you but that's awesome. So you're getting to the end of it. I wanted to ask you about what you're working on now, so I could put it on my list to, you know, put it on my bookshelf.
I have a new nonfiction book that's coming out next year, like early 25, that I just finished. So what that means is I'm conjuring a new novel. And I'm not really sure what it's about yet, but that's normal. I'm never sure what they're about till I'm about 200 pages in.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, because I would like have a theme, but every one of your books seems to have a theme.
It does, but the theme comes from process.
When you rewrite it, do you put it more in the beginning or do you find it's already been there?
Yeah, it's like all the themes come spilling out in a bunch of threads. And after I have enough pages, I can go in and arrange and curate and discover what the hell the story is, which isn't how other people do it, but some people do. So that's me.
Well, thank you so much. I know this is the River Writers and you don't live on our river, but you do live on a river on the Oregon coast. So I'm happy. Do they call the North Coast as well? How far down?
I think we're not considered the North Coast, but I have a very similar situation to you. I live on the Salmon River next to the ocean.
Well, definitely come visit Astoria. And if you ever meet here, I know people at the Performing Arts Center. I didn't even know we had one, but we do. And that was really exciting.
And so do you. When you're here, you got to come out here and we'll do something.
Oh, definitely. I would love that. If not anything else, just have dinner. Kelly wants to talk to you guys so badly. let's get Lydia and Andy over. I'm like, okay.
We say that all the time too. You're some of the few humans on the planet we actually want to sit down with.
Oh, I get that too. Yeah, you have to have your small groups and like the community, but I usually like if I'll set up a reading or something like that, and I don't know if you feel this way, but like the whole day of, I'm like, why did I do this? I know it's a great thing and people are going to come, but I don't know why I did this. Why? And I was so introverted for like the first, you know, 2 or 3 years of me and Kelly's marriage. And I was, you know, I was very, it's like, had that appearance, you know, of being like very, you know, confident sometimes, but most of the time just, and she was like, you got to be able, if you're going to be a writer, you got to go out and talk to people. Like, okay, all right, I'll try harder.
Oh my God, solidarity.
Yeah, it's tough sometimes, but thank you. And I really appreciate, I know you're taking off, you got to go teach and pretty soon, and that's going to be, I don't know, I miss it sometimes, but I like being retired too, so.
Yeah, me too. Well, we love you, and I do hope we see each other again sooner than later. And please know we're thinking about you all the time. We talk about you all the time. We tell our son Miles about you all the time.
Oh, that's awesome.
So you're kind of part of our family story, just so you know.
Thank you so much, Lydia, for being here. And I'm going to let you go, and I appreciate it. We'll touch, and we'll get together.
Much love.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye. Well, we love you, and I do hope we see each other again sooner than later. And please know we're thinking about you all the time. We talk about you all the time. We tell our son Miles about you all the time.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much, Lydia, for being here. And I'm going to let you go, and I appreciate it. We'll touch, and we'll get together.
Much love.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us today on River Writers, and thanks to my guest Lydia Yuknovich for sitting down and chatting about writing. And a big thank you for all of you out there listening. The Writers Guild of Astoria is a 501c3 nonprofit organization promoting the literary arts and serving writers in the Lower Columbia region. You can learn more and become a member by visiting www.thewritersguild.org. Until next time, keep the words flowing and your pencil sharp. I'm Sean Davis.